I call this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. We have a quorum present. Lee Johnson, have you had a chance to review the minutes for March 12, 2024?
Chair Abadji, I reviewed them. I make a motion they're approved.
Thank you. Lee Johnson makes a motion for the approval of the minutes for March 12, 2024. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails. And the minutes for March 12, 2024 are approved. Okay, so we've got a couple bills on the agenda today, Chair Howard, all you. The first one is House File 4271, which is before us again for your amendment. Chair Howard, do you want to move the bill?
Yes, Chair Gbeja, I would move the bill.
All right, Chair Howard moves that House File 4271 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. I also see you have an A2 amendment. Chair Howard, would you describe the amendment?
Chair Budget, I'll move the A2 amendment, which is a technical amendment to ensure that we're conforming to the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act with the creation of these you know, carbon copy entities, so to speak.
Okay. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Lee Johnson.
Chair Abadji, Chair Howe, thank you for making sure that this information is protected. The only question I have is, have you talked to the chair and lead of the Judiciary Civil Law to make sure they don't have to see this because of the Chapter 13 implication?
Chair Howard?
Chair Budget, yes, we have connected with their staff. Thank you for the question.
Anything further, Lee Johnson?
All right, that's it.
Any other discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right, the A2 amendment is, the motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. So we heard the testimony and discussion on this bill, but before we renew the motion, if anyone has any further discussion, comments, or questions? All right, seeing none, any other comments? Okay. So Chair Howard renews the motion that House File 4271, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right. House File 4271, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register. We are switching the order in the agenda slightly because I don't see your testifier. So we'll move to House File 4555. Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill?
Chair Budget, yes, I'll move the bill.
Chair Howard moves that House File 4555 be referred to the Taxes Committee. Chair Howard, to your bill.
Chair Budget, members, last year we passed a quarter cent metrowide sales tax dedicated to housing as well as statewide housing aid. For the first time in our state's history, delivering long-term, dependable, ongoing revenues that would go directly to our counties and cities to address their unique affordable housing challenges. Just a reminder, about the broad set of uses includes supports to prevent homelessness and increase housing stability, the creation and building of new affordable housing units to rent, the ability to build new affordable home ownership opportunities, and preserve quality, affordable, and supportive housing units that we currently have. And since we passed this bill, it's been exciting to connect with cities and counties across the state who are just understanding, and everyone's in a little different place, but what I hear the most is that folks are excited to utilize these resources to address the needs in their community. And I want to highlight Hennepin County as an example. Who has put together a plan that really focuses resources on the continuum of housing, including direct supports to prevent homelessness, a fund that will help build and close financial gaps to build affordable housing to rent, also focusing on home ownership, both building and preserving. All told, they're estimating a yearly impact of more than 12,000 households or new units with the resources that they're planning to dedicate, and that's just one county. It really shows the promise of what these new funds for our communities can mean for Minnesotans and our long-term work to address our affordable housing challenges all across the state. And what this bill seeks to do is make sure that these new housing funds are being utilized to build and create new housing opportunities. We felt it was important to give more guidance to counties and cities to ensure that they know that these state resources and the intent for these resources is to supplement the existing resources, not supplant. Essentially, guard against the notion of these resources being utilized to supplant existing funds that are supporting local housing. We want these new resources to go on top because the need is great, and that's what the intent of these new resources were for. And so this bill sets out a mechanism for cities to ensure that that is the case going forward. And we also provided a mechanism for cities and counties to return the resources that could be applied in a pool to other cities and counties. If, for example, you know, this isn't too high, this is too high of an administrative burden, or that they would just choose not to spend the resources. In addition, and after talking with advocates, we are providing some language tweaks on the eligibility of the funds, specifically to clarify and ensure that these resources can be utilized to preserve housing for some of our nonprofit housing providers that are providing affordable and supportive housing. To offer that clarity, this was called out in the bill last year in some form or fashion, and this adds a little more specificity. So in closing, we're just beginning to see the impact of what it means to provide dependable long-term investments going directly to our cities and counties. And this bill will help us maximize that public investment so that we're meeting the moment, creating new units of housing, supporting Minnesotans, preventing homelessness, all of the things that were set out when we passed this bill last year to make it, to maximize its impact. And with that, I'll turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Howard. We have a couple of testifiers on the list. So I'm going to start with Ben Helvick Anderson. Ben Helvick Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair Egbaje. My name is Ben Helvick Anderson, and I'm the VP of Policy and Organizing at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Beacon is a collaborative of 100 congregations that creates new deeply affordable homes with services, sustains 20 affordable buildings for over 700 residents, and organizes so that all people can have a home. Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative supports HF 4555 to clarify the statute regarding the uses of local housing aid to meet the moment. Last year, Beacon was a strong proponent of creating the Metro sales tax and sees it as a critical ongoing resource to fund housing, and we are excited by how some local cities and counties like Hennepin County are starting to imagine using this great fund. This fund is needed more than ever because of surging costs, decreasing revenues, and growing needs have combined to create a perfect storm for affordable housing providers. Those risks threaten to wash away decades of progress, and with them, the stability of Minnesotans. We risk losing yesterday's investments if we don't direct resources right to preserve affordable housing. To meet this moment, it is essential that these funds act as additional dollars for cities and counties, not as replacements. We've heard a county discuss cutting their contribution to their HRA by the exact amount of the new revenue generated. This must not happen. It is also critical to clarify the items related to supportive housing, services, and operations. While some counties and cities are open to funding these with the current bill, others have told us that they are not eligible. Supportive housing is a key strategy to ending homelessness in our region, and the model is at a breaking point. The rapid increase in the amount and acuity of need because of things like the opioid crisis, along with skyrocketing expenses like insurance, are just some of the challenges. To guarantee the safety of our residents, providers like Beacon must now provide 24/7 security in our buildings, an enormous unfunded expense. Without additional public resources like this local housing aid, supportive housing providers may not be able to continue operating to the extent we currently are. It needs to be clear in these funds that they can support these uses. The legislature's courageous act last year of creating the Metro sales tax to fund local housing aid was a huge positive step forward, which we commend you all for. To make that step most effective in addressing our housing needs today, please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Commissioner Jeff Lundy. Welcome, Commissioner. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff Lundy, Hennepin County Commissioner, District 1. I just want to thank the Chair and members of this committee for the opportunity to testify on House File 4555 today. If there's one issue that unites the whole Hennepin County Board, it's housing. We firmly believe that our 1.3 million residents deserve a safe, dignified place to call home. On behalf of all of us, I want to thank you for the massive infusion of funding you sent our way last session to create affordable housings, not just in Hennepin County, but throughout Minnesota. You know, when you think about a county is really a safety net. We deliver services for people in need, whether it's mental health, whether it's people who are challenged by addiction, whether it's medical, whether it's childcare, whether it's people who've been laid off, whether it's people who are just trying to stay in their home, or maybe they're trying to find a home because they're on the street. So we know that they come to us in a time of crisis and need, and we have a lot of partners. The state, the federal government, provides us a lot of money to spend on your behalf to deliver those services. And I can tell you for a fact, that with stable housing, all of those services are much more effective. So we know if people are in stable housing, everything else that we're going to do to help improve their lives can work better. I just wanted to share some good news on how Hennepin County is spending the new local affordable housing aid. Annually, we expect to receive about $29 million. In short, this funding will supercharge our efforts to produce more affordable housing units. It will also help us to tailor units to unique needs of our population. And I want to echo what Chair Howard said. We're not replacing what we're doing. We're adding on. And so we're going to take what you do, add what we are going to continue to invest in to make sure that we're providing those options. And we'll make sure those funds are used in the way that you will find that's appropriate. Over the last few years, we've more than doubled the number of units we could finance annually. And we did so by almost doubling our portion of units affordable to incomes below 30% AMI. The new local affordable housing aid will build upon this success. I'll just share just four top investments that the aid will support in Hennepin County. First, we're going to use almost a quarter of the funding to augment our success in housing court eviction prevention program. This is a program that happens at the courts, working with tenants and landlords to try to forestall evictions, to try to see if we can keep people in housing, because if we keep people in housing, it forestalls a lot of other negative consequences. Second, we're going to use revenues to repair and grow the capacity of affordable housing developers and owners. This committee is very aware of the fact that affordable housing developers are struggling right now. Inadequate and inconsistent funding hobbled our most promising developers. Local housing aid allows our repair and grow program to scale up so we can shore up developers and owners who have shown long-term commitments to create and maintain affordable housing. This new funding will help them get back on their feet, stable staff and resource. These providers are the ones who are going to build the new units often, and right now they're struggling to maintain and keep the ones they have. So we need to help them move beyond their current struggle so they can be focused on what we need. Third, once our affordable housing developers have stabilized, we will shift our work into Hyperdrive to increase production. Our partners need to be in a good place. When they're in that good place, we know that they're going to start to look at where else we can provide new units. We learned during the pandemic that if we can develop that pipeline of housing projects, we can provide this strategic development. So you will start to see year on year growth in housing and availability across all of the different needs. And finally, we'll invest the remaining funds in preservation, sustainability, and home ownership. Another thing that we've learned is if we invest in ways that can weather uncertainty, we can help people weather that. One way we'll accomplish this is by braiding this new funding with our successful support housing strategy capital fund to ensure long-term sustainability of supporting housing units across the county. Multiple funding streams into this program not only allows us to scale up production in good times, it allows us to weather the bad times and the tough times. So when we mix different sources, we're not beholden to just one. We can ebb and flow, and we can continue that so people have, you know, developers need a consistent funding source so they can make programs. This will help us create, we figure about over 700, preserve or create about 700 units this year, including 60 new home opportunities. These are just a few samples, and we are just one county. We know that counties across the state of Minnesota are working hard to deliver solutions that fit their own county, and know that we appreciate yourselves. We appreciate Chair Howard, Chair Abaje, and this committee for the work that you've done to invest in us. We will make you proud, and we will give you those numbers that you are hoping to see in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person on the list is Matt Hilgart. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I want to thank Chair Howard for his generosity, not only in last year and his advocacy for this proposal, but also yesterday he met with a group of counties in his office. We crammed that space talking about this bill and joint goals on what we want to see out of that. And that's what I really appreciate. It's a cooperation. It's a collaboration. You heard from one of our testifiers and commissioners just now about the excitement. I will say that is complemented by excitement on all the seven county metro boards about as they approach new resources, new creative approaches to housing shortages in their community, and also trying to complement the wider array of resources and nonprofit partners that they have in their communities to try to make beneficial change. The things that I wanted to chat about today were a couple things that we wanted to note our gratitude on, which was the expanded flexibility for uses in Section 2. You notice with Commissioner Lundy's testimony that counties are facing a variety of crises that aren't just limited to available housing stock. It's also supportive services. So we really appreciate that your language in this bill allows us to widen our scope of what we will be able to do and the needs that we'll be able to meet. The second thing that I'd like to thank you for is the flexibility on spending timeline. This alone is not something that's kind of uncommon in what we're dealing with in terms of county resources and spending. You might note that in ARPA conversations and CARE conversations, even the federal government in a bipartisan manner switched spending timelines to acknowledge the fact that there are still workforce shortages, material shortages that would limit some of these good spending plans if they were just spent down to 1 or 2 years. So we really appreciate that flexibility in Section 4. I wanted to say for the record that we hear you, that these funds are meant to supplement and not supplant. That is a message that AMC has also been trying to tell members as well. We do think there's a better way to get to that common goal than the maintenance of effort language that is in the bill right now. We'd like to continue conversations. Just yesterday, counties brought in examples of some language that they are familiar with CDBG funds. The problems with maintenance of efforts are twofold, but I'll focus on one of them, and that is that it potentially punishes counties who actually aggressively increase their housing budgets in a given year to do a major project or projects plural, and then the next year they're trapped by saying, oh, you have to hit that level. Yes, we can draft them creatively, but then counties will cautiously think about, oh, maybe we won't do that because we'll be trapped into that existing funding level of the year next. And I think that's a shared goal that we have of not doing that. So finding a way to get to supplement, not supplant, without a rigid MOE structure is something we'd love to work for. And then the last thing I'd like to talk about, which is an unpopular topic but is a real topic, which is the administrative costs that go hand in hand with administering something the size of which Hennepin is looking at, right? $30 million of new funding. We're going to need compliance officers. We're going to need project managers. We're going to need some of that administrative staff. We hear you loud and clear that this was not meant to alleviate existing county staff members' budgets in the housing arena, but there are going to be new hires for many of these counties to carry out these new funds. And so we want to make sure that the language also respects and provides some flexibility to meet those needs, so we aren't just raising the levy to do that. So those are my comments for today. We're looking forward to continuing to work with the chair and members of this committee to hopefully meet those mutual goals. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Deirdre Schmidt. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Deirdre Schmidt, and I am the president and CEO at Common Bond Communities. Thank you, Vice Chair Agbaje, members of the committee. Thank you, Chair Howard. Thanks for hearing me today related to House File 4555. As I said, I am the president and CEO at Common Bond Communities. We provide housing and supportive services to residents in about 50 cities in Minnesota, including 1,500 households that are your low and moderate income constituents, members of this committee's constituents. I want to applaud and thank you, the entire legislature, for creating last session the metro areas, the metro sales tax for housing. It's an important and flexible tool at a time when the limitations of our existing funding tools are very apparent. Existing sources like the Federal Low Income Housing Tax Credit and some of the soft debt that our State Housing Finance Agency is able to provide cannot do everything we need them to do. Those sources do not cover operating deficits, and they do not support social services. Operating deficits result when the revenue from rents that are affordable to low-income residents do not generate enough resources to cover the operating costs of properties. For example, in Common Bonds Communities portfolio, currently two-thirds of our housing developments do not self-sustain. With regard to social services, these are as important to some of the populations we serve as the bricks and mortar housing that those sources do create. Public sources only cover between 10 and 15% of the cost of social services in our current portfolio at Common Bond Communities. Sales tax proceeds are a really powerful tool that's not just for the production of new housing, but also for the stabilization of existing housing and services. I'm really grateful that some local leaders, like those at Hennepin County, are thinking already how they can use this newfound tool this year to support existing residents, existing homes, and existing organizations like ours that have been struggling in the face of uncontrollable insurance expenses, utilities, labor, and maintenance. And some of you have had conversations with us about the kinds of comments you get from our residents, your constituents, particularly in those last two categories of labor and maintenance. Those impact resident experience profoundly. A recent MHP survey indicated that among housing and service nonprofits, 3,500 units were at risk of sale or loss because the expense of maintenance, operating, and service costs have grown so dramatically over the past 4 years, and resident incomes just haven't kept pace. Without financial restructuring in some cases and additional investment in the physical plant, existing affordable housing assets are at a danger of loss. And this, by the way, is in a stock of housing which have had hundreds of millions of dollars of previous public investment. The proposed amendments will ensure that the sales tax is indeed additive to local government's ability to participate in the new production and stabilization of existing housing, provision of social services, and the stabilization of mission-oriented entities like Common Bond and others who serve your low-income constituents. Thank you for hearing me today.
Thank you so much for your testimony. With that, if there's any members of the public, not seen any, if there are member discussion. Lee John.
Chair Abadji, Representative Howard, or Chair Howard, I should say. I'm a little concerned on this maintenance effort, 5.8 to 5.11. It's two words on 5.10 that I'm concerned about it, but it says not less. There could be a situation where there was a major maintenance issue that needed to be taken care of, a boiler going out, a roof that needed to be replaced, or something, redoing the parking lot, major repairs to the garage or the parking area, which could really inflate that three-year average. And that could bring up the cost even more down the road. So I would rather see something like within a certain percentage of the three-year average or something like that, if you'd consider that. I think that would make it more compatible. Because if you have a three-year average and you can't go less than a major event, it just throws the budget out of whack. And I'm looking at the sales tax and property tax in the metro area, they're high enough the way it is.
Chair Howard?
Chair Baje, Lee Johnson, I appreciate those comments, and I appreciate the comments of Mr. Hilgart. And I do think that there's work to be done to make sure that the goal, which is to make sure that these funds are additive and supplement, not supplant. I think there are ways we can do that get at some of the things you're talking about and making sure that we're leaving space for flexibility and guarding against some unintended consequences. And so I appreciate those comments. I take them to heart and think that piece of this does need some work and will be worked on as we move the bill forward.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Badge, Chair Howard, thank you.
I also saw Representative Dotsa. Do you still have those?
Thank you, Chair Abadji, Chair Howard. Just a general question, Chair Howard. How is the general perception of this received in the general public as well as the stakeholders at this time?
Chair Howard?
Chair Abadji, Representative Dotsa. I've heard a lot of positivity here's what I would say. We continue to hear from so many Minnesotans that housing is at a crisis level. I mean, a day doesn't go by in my community or others that we don't hear about challenges with accessing an affordable place to rent or trying to find an affordable home to own. And so I hear more about that side of things, frankly, from Minnesotans that are saying, you need to do more because what we're doing right now isn't working and things are getting worse. And where I've heard more specifically from stakeholders that are sort of invested in the work of either at the county level or developers or nonprofit housing providers. I have heard a lot of excitement that a tool is now going to exist that hasn't been there presently. And you know, we talked ad nauseum about this last year about how there just has not been public funding at anything close to the level of need. And so the folks that are invested in this work see a big opportunity here to meet what I think we hear most of all from constituents, which is that there is just such a lack of the kinds of housings that Minnesotans want and need.
Representative Dossett.
Thank you, Representative Baje. Chair Howard, just a follow-up question. What would the general tax be with this in, say, Hennepin County at this time?
Chair Howard?
On a purchase.
So Chair Baje, Representative Dotson says it's a quarter of a cent. And that's in the seven county metro-wide area.
You know, I just to follow up on that, thank you, Representative Baje. I just have a little hesitation on getting behind this because my concern is I understand your intent for the seven county metro. Can you assure me that this is not an attempt to eventually reach out into greater Minnesota and the whole state of Minnesota?
Chair Howard.
Chair Baje, Representative Dotson, I will say I've heard plenty from folks in greater Minnesota counties and otherwise that very much would like to see some of these mechanisms in greater Minnesota. But that's not what this bill does. There have been proposals to think about more statewide perspectives on the need for new revenue, but that's not what this bill does.
Thank you.
Any other committee discussion? Not seeing any. Any final remarks, Chair Howard?
Chair Baje, members, I just want to appreciate the testifiers, and I want to call out again the examples we heard from Hennepin County and tell you that I'm hearing those examples all across the state about what the promise can be to address our affordable housing needs. And I also appreciate the comments of folks that want to continue to work with us to make sure that we, you know, hit the right note here to make some modifications that ensure that these new dollars are having its maximum impact. And so I look forward to those conversations as this bill proceeds. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Chair Howard renews the motion that House File 4555 be referred to the Taxes Committee. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and House File 4555 is referred to the Taxes Committee. The next bill on the agenda is House File 4735. Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move this bill.
Chair Howard moves that House File 4735 be laid over for possible inclusion in a potential omnibus bill. So, Chair Howard, to your bill.
Chair Agbaje, members, this is the agency policy bill, and so I will largely defer to Mr. Kitzberger to walk through the bill. I'll note specifically that this bill, it does include some clarifications to three items that we passed in last year's omnibus bill, a clarification related to our fee-based down payment assistance, a clarification related to our appropriation to Urban Homeworks, and a clarification related to the Northland Foundation to ensure that those resources can meet their legislative impact. But I know just enough to be dangerous with this bill before turning it over to Mr. Kitzberger.
All right, thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair and members. My name is Dan Kitzberger. I'm the Legislative Director at Minnesota Housing. So if it's helpful, I can kind of just briefly walk through the various provisions in the bill. And then, you know, we can leave time for questions afterward or during, whichever you prefer, Madam Vice Chair. So starting with Section 1 through, I think it's Section 1 through 8. So what we're trying to do here is get away from kind of some of the narrowness in the definitions or the practices around energy conservation and be able to actually reflect what it is the agency's climate goals are, and then also better align with some of the federal resources we're anticipating coming into the state through legislation recently passed. So we're trying to use kind of commonly utilized terms within the climate action or the industry that addresses climate change related issues, and to better reflect again what we're doing and what the industry is doing as a whole with some of these resources. So we're applying it to several different areas of our statute, some of which are active programs like the Rehabilitation Loan Program, which is appropriated, and then some multifamily programs as well. But what we're also hoping to be able to do is if, you know, a household or a property comes to us for a loan, such as through the rehab loan program, we can also pair it with some of those potential federal resources. And some of those programs that aren't currently active, we may come and seek funding for in the future to make sure that we're leveraging all possible federal resources through those. So that's sections 1 through 8, and then I think there are a couple more later on in the bill. Section 9 is just a further clarification from last year to ensure that tribal nations are aware that they're available or they're eligible for all of our agency programs. The way we had drafted it last year kind of limited it to this chapter, whereas we get a lot of our appropriations in session law, so I wanted to make sure that we made that clarification and it was clear that tribal nations are in fact eligible. Section 10 has to do with rent and income limits and attempting to align them for compliance purposes with federal definitions. So really what we find out is through all of the different programs that come to us, there are varying definitions of both income and rent thresholds that we are trying to adhere to and that the properties that apply to us for particularly for capital funding are trying to adhere to as well. So where there are you know, for example, I think we have something like 20 different definitions that we work with on a regular basis between federal and state programs. So what we're hoping to do is make it more predictable, both for the entities that come to us for funding and then have to do compliance work on the back end of receiving that funding, and then for our internal staff to make it more predictable to say, you know, if there are kind of vague areas within income, you know, I think one of the more common examples we confront is adjusting for household size. So we can then say we're going to go to HUD's table for various AMI thresholds for household size under the tax credit programs, which, you know, often get paired with those resources, and just make it clear that, you know, if there are situations of uncertainty, that's what we're going to be referencing. Section 11, what we're attempting to do here is for households that are eligible for the programs listed among other types of public assistance programs, just that folks, if they are eligible for one of those programs, they're also deemed eligible for our assistance programs. So that's things like the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, or Housing Trust Fund Rental Assistance, or the Bridges Program are kind of the primary examples of those. Again, Section 12 has more to do with updating the language around energy efficiency and some of the activity we're going to be doing in that area. Section 13 has to do with our our agency's debt ceiling. So last year, you may remember, we sought a clarification for all of our outstanding notes to be limited to general obligation outstanding bonds and notes, so not including housing infrastructure that I don't think it was intended originally, and so we very much appreciate you making that clarification. In the meantime, we received considerable new resources, particularly for down payment assistance, that are going to get paired with agency first mortgages. And so the type of debt that we issue for to finance those mortgages is the agency's debt. It's not the state, so it counts against our rating and our debt limits. And so we want to raise that ceiling because we're anticipating significant growth in coming years as a result of the additional down payment assistance. At the end of fiscal year 23, we were at about $3.5 billion of general obligation outstanding notes and bonds. We anticipate being breaching that $5 billion mark by the end of fiscal year 25, and so we're looking to address that. And again, this has to do with our single family mortgage productivity and hopefully not having any, you know, kind of arbitrary limits on that and being able to reach as many households as we can. Section 14 has to do with, this is some language that got missed last year in transferring the responsibilities for the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund from Minnesota Management and Budget to Minnesota Housing. So these are pieces in our statute that needed to get cleared up along with that. Section 15 has to do with housing infrastructure bonds. And if you scroll down to lines 10.18 and 10.19, we've been working with stakeholders on this language really since last year to better understand and meet their needs. So we think that perhaps the reference to Section 1002 was in error, and so we're going to work on this a little bit more with them to get that straightened out, and because I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to reference Section 1003 of the Accessibility Code and then layer on top of that some specific provisions of accessibility in 1002 that call for a little bit greater level. So we'll keep working on that language with the stakeholders. Section 16, this is a change to our workforce or Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Development Program. This program came to us almost a decade ago now from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And we haven't really made any changes to the statutory language in that time. We've just kind of been implementing it as it came to us and actually got a significant appropriation for that program last session, and the RFP for that is open currently. But we've heard a little bit of feedback now. We've had some time to work with it and found that this this minimum threat or this minimum population size of 500 has posed some challenges for smaller communities in greater Minnesota who want housing, have a viable project, but are needing to kind of search the area for, you know, a CDA or an EDA in a larger community that they can then partner with. This would allow them to just apply on their own. So we're eliminating that lower population threshold in hopes that it will simplify things for those communities.
Mr. Kitzberger, I saw that Representative Petersburg had a question.
Yeah.
If you're ready to take it now or...
Yeah.
Go ahead,
if you're ready to take it now, it goes back to Section 13 in regards to the debt ceiling. $2 billion increase in debt ceiling general obligation bonds. How does that impact the state's overall limit on general obligation bonds? Because it seems to me that would have to be included, and I don't think we have that much. So right. We're just checking.
Mr. Kitzberger.
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Petersburg, this has to do, so as the agency is a discrete component unit of the state. We have our own debt limit and our own credit ratings from agencies in the same way the state does. And so that debt limit and the ratings that go along with it apply only to the agency.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Well, you know, trunk highway bonds are similar to outside too, but it's included in the general obligation side of the limits. But you're saying that you have your own credit limit and it does not impact the general obligation bonds that is available. So basically what you're saying is that this $7 billion is in addition to the general obligation bonds that we have throughout the rest of the state. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Kitzberger.
Madam Vice Chair, that's correct. And I think one of the key distinctions here is the debt service on those bonds after we issue them is paid by mortgage holders paying their principal and interest of their mortgage. And so it's kind of a different tool that gets used because of our specific powers in statute.
Representative
Peterson.
All right, thank you.
Lee John.
Chair Abagier, I had same concerns as well with that raising it almost 30%. These are GO bonds, correct?
Mr. Kitzberger?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Abagier into the testifier. We also have HIB bonds, correct?
Madam Vice Chair, that's correct, too.
So that, Chair Abagier members, that's a lot of debt. Granted, these are supposed to be paid off by people paying their mortgage and making their mortgage payments, but we had, not that many years ago, I was serving a lot of foreclosures papers because people weren't paying their debt. And it was called the housing bubble that burst. I'm concerned that it could happen again, and raising the debt limit that much. The one last question is if they do default and don't pay their debt, then let's say we have the housing bubble burst again, is it going to be the Minnesota taxpayers that are on the hook for this debt?
Mr. Kitzberger?
Madam Vice Chair and Representative Johnson, if I could maybe back up for a second to the question. In general, our mortgage portfolio and the portfolios of the organizations that we partner with in the community who do mortgage lending fare traditionally better than the broader market as a whole in terms of repayment and default rates. The reason for that is largely home buyer education on the front end, right? Like we do a lot of work with prospective households, and the organizations that we partner with in the community do a lot of work. And so, you know, during the downturn, our mortgage production, just like the broader marketplace, slowed, but we didn't quite have the bottom that the rest of the broader marketplace did. And to answer your question, I don't know if it's solely Minnesota taxpayers on the hook. My presumption would be because it's a general obligation bond that the language in the Constitution around that would apply. But we do have, you know, and I would need to better understand this myself from our financial folks, like what the contingencies are in terms of you know, a sizable default in our, a sizable percentage of default in our portfolio.
Lee Johnson.
Not here, Badger, Representative Howard. I guess until we know those answers, I think I would hold off on increasing that debt limit, right, because we need to find out for sure who's actually on the hook for these if Minnesota Housing would happen to default on these, because that's a lot of debt and a lot of concern for the taxpayers of Minnesota.
Chair Howard, any?
Chair Badger, Representative Johnson, I would say the distinction about this kind of, I'm glad we're having a conversation about what this kind of debt we're looking to do, and that's create more opportunities for folks to be homeowners. And if we sort of want to square, I think, all of our goals to create more of those opportunities with the influx of resources that we passed last year, this is part of doing that. And, you know, the home buyer education, all of those things, I think lead me to believe that this is, you know, the right direction to go.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Badger, Representative Howard. Like I say, I have concerns on this, but bringing more money into the formula does not reduce the cost of housing and the cost of a home. What we've seen in the past by dumping more money funds into a program ends up increasing the cost. And we know that for every $1,000 that a price of a home goes up, well, there's 4,000 people left out of the market. So we need, instead of just dumping more money into it, which will more than likely increase the cost of housing, I think we need to look at ways to reduce the cost of homes in the long run, which will in long term end up providing more funds than the current debt limit we have.
Chair Howard.
Chair Badger, Representative Johnson, I thank you for the opportunity to plug why we also need to pass the Minnesotans for More Homes initiative, Representative Kraft and Representative Kozlowski's bill. I think that's critical. We can walk and chew gum at the same time, though. I think we need to do both of these at the same time.
Thank you. We'll move on with Mr. Kitzberger for the remainder of the bill.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I think we're on, Section 17.
Yes, that is correct.
So this is statute that has to do with the somewhat newly launched State Housing Tax Credit and Contribution Fund. The program went live last fall, and this will be our first year in operation, and so we've had a few learnings as part of that. The language that's, or the striking of the language that starts on line 11.33 has to do with some specific set-asides that were passed with the original language, and what we found was a significant challenge in the legislation that passed, where you are allowed to contribute either to a general fund or a general pool of contributions or to a specific project, and I think the language inadvertently made money that was contributed or funds that were contributed to a specific project also have those set-asides apply. So we didn't think that was the intention. So, but as we were talking with stakeholders and our program staff who've been implementing this program, we also found that there are more contributions coming in that are being specified for a specific project. And so in order to help those projects move faster and the capital get paired faster, we thought it was fitting to do away with the set-asides altogether. And so that's what we're proposing to do through that language. Section 18 just allows for grants and loans that can be made. And in that particular subdivision, it requires that the agency not award a grant to a disqualified individual or business. And so that's where you see the language that follows that, those additions. What we wanted to do there was better specify what an individual or a business or a and kind of better understand the stake that an individual would have to have in their business that would deem them to be disqualified. And so that's what that language is intending to do. And then if you scroll down to line 13.21 and 22, This is just a recognition that we are really relying on the contributors and the applicants to that program to disclose all of their business interests when attempting to apply for these credits. And then, as Chair Howard indicated, sections 19, 20, and 21 have to do with clarifications from last year's bill, omnibus bill that passed. The first one in section 19 was for a grant to Urban Homeworks and just allowing them to also do gap financing as we define it under the challenge program currently. That was omitted inadvertently. And then also allowing for them to serve households at or below 60% of AMI instead of that window of 50 to 60%. And then there's a fix to the Northland Foundation's line item in section 20 to better reflect what they were hoping to do. I think they also want to be able to provide technical assistance to communities in their service area as they set up local housing trust funds. And then lastly is the language fix for the fee-based home buyer program in section 21. The clause 2 of residing in a census tract where at least 60% of occupied housing units are renters. It sounds like that was inadvertently made a part of the eligibility criteria, which would have left out large swaths of the state. And so with the removal of that, we can make sure that that program is going to be available statewide.
Thank you for your testimony. Chair Howard, any other comments before we open up for
I do not.
Member discussion. Representative Nat.
Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call.
This bill is being laid over, so.
Oh, I didn't hear the referral.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Lee Johnson.
Chair Abadji, Chair Howard. There's a lot of things in this bill that aren't bad. But that debt limit is a serious issue that we need to deal with.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair. And Rep. Howard for bringing this bill forward. My question is, in subdivision 2 under the challenge program on page 14, for the exclusive housing for projects for American Indians, did you say that was for tribal governments, or is that eligible for urban native-led orgs too?
Chair Howard or Mr. Kitzberger?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Kozlowski, that has to do with the specific set-aside in that under the challenge program, and so that money is available for projects where an American Indian is intended to be the end user. This program, yes, as a result of tribal nations have always been eligible for this program, but we just, as part of the language earlier in the bill, we just wanted to make certain that it was clear that it's all agency programs and not just the ones that exist in our statute.
Representative Kozlowski?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I'm not sure whether that answers your question.
No, thank you, Chair, and Director Kitzberger. I should know this by now. I work with you all the time. So if I'm hearing you say the end user is for an American Indian, whether that is an eligible tribal government or a native-led housing organization, for example, like in Duluth's American Indian Community
Correct.
Housing, that's what I'm thinking about. It's like they'd be eligible. Okay,
yep.
Thank you.
Any further questions? All right, not seeing any. Chair Howard, any last words?
Chair Gbaji, members, I just want to thank Mr. Kitzberger and Minnesota Housing for their work on this bill and in particular for their work with a lot of our members and organizations to make sure that we can meet our intent with the legislation we passed last year, and look forward to partnering with the agency on this bill as it moves forward.
Thank you. Chair Howard renews the motion that House File 4735 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the bill is laid over. Chair Howard, any further announcements for the committee? No? Okay. All right. Seeing no more business before us, the committee is adjourned.